As you know, I'm a big proponent of CBD to tonify the endocannabinoid system, which regulates many of our most critical bodily functions, such as learning and memory, emotional processing, sleep, temperature and pain control, and inflammatory and immune responses. CBD is a real breakthrough in herbal products. But you may not know that CBD can deliver the same healthful results for your pets. The CBD brand that I take personally and recommend to my patients is Plus CBD from CV Sciences, which is now proud to introduce premier CBD chews tailored for dogs. Plus CBD pet wellness treats are crafted with the utmost care and supported by extensive research validated by a landmark safety study backed by the National Animal Supplement Council. There are two varieties, Plus CBD pet hip and joint health chews and Plus CBD pet calming care chews. To learn more and to order, visit pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman30 for 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for Plus CBD's pet wellness blends. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Layla Mutin is with us, our resident nutritionist, and we're ready to go to answer your questions. So what do we got, Layla?
We've got a question here from Gabe. Hello, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. Thank you for all that you do and the regular education you give to all of us. I like to drink carbonated water that is sometimes flavored. The ingredients read carbonated water with natural flavor. How do you feel about the natural flavor in the list of ingredients? Is it something for all of us to worry about in our drinks? Gabe, this is a great question, because the phrase natural flavor, if you see that on an ingredient list of a food, like maybe a can of soup or some other kind of processed food product, that natural flavor may refer to MSG, monosodium glutamate. But in your carbonated water, in your seltzer, typically natural flavor will be like a fruit essence, whether it's a lemon, lime, or an orange, or maybe a cherry or a blackberry. I've seen those flavors on carbonated water. Dr. Hoffman, you have a soda stream, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so
I remember.
So for example, yeah. I made for lunch today, I made lemonade with, you know, some like lemon essence, which is not like sweetened lemon juice. It's like really that it's very tart. You can't drink it straight. And it just feel like a little bit like a thimbleful in with some carbonated water, sparkling water from my soda stream. And I added a little bit of that reacted magnesium powder, which is made with stevia, to kind of with a sweetness that kind of counteracts. And it's like drinking lemonade. It's a little tart, but it's got a little bit of sweetness. But it's essentially a no-calorie drink. I'm getting my magnesium. I'm getting a little flavor essence. It encourages me to hydrate, because sometimes, you know, it's boring to just drink tap water, you know, right? And I love carbonated water. And people ask, you know, is carbonated water bad for you? I don't think carbonated water is bad in any way, shape, or form. But maybe I'm kind of biased.
I think people got that a little confused, because they throw carbonated water under the same umbrella as soda. Mm-hmm. And under the umbrella of soda, there is also cola, your Coke, your Pepsi, things with phosphoric acid, caramel color. These things are not great for us.
So I got to say,
the carbonated water is CO2.
Yeah, I'm just looking this up. And what they say, the definition of natural flavors in sparkling water is, it's really not a regulated term. And so it means the flavor originally came from a plant or an animal, which means that it could be highly processed, modified thing, but it is not a totally synthetic chemical that's been created in a lab. So it's derived from, but that gives them a lot of leeway to create. I mean, you know, stuff could be not so healthy, but it is a small thing. And if you want to get around that, you know, get a soda stream and, you know, buy some organic juice and just put like a thimbleful into, you know, your
you make seltzer. It a spritzer.
Make a spritzer.
You make it a spritzer.
Yeah.
Throw some frozen blueberries or raspberries into your water. Make it pretty. Put it in your favorite goblet.
Like,
you know,
a wedge of a lemon or lime or something. Like, that's not more natural. You want to really be a purist about it.
Right.
I don't have a problem
with
it. I don't think it's, I think among processed things, is one of the least harmful, most innocuous things to
consume. True. Yeah. And the most important thing when you're looking at, say, a bottle of supermarket seltzer or something, seltzer is really what I'm talking about, that is a fruit flavor. You want to read the ingredients to make sure there's no added fruit flavor or aspartame, which is NutraSweet, mm-hmm. because the nutrition facts label will still say zero on the carbohydrate, zero on the calories, but you've still got this artificial sweetener, which is not great.
Right.
So,
right.
Therefore,
yep.
Yeah. Gabe, thank you for your question.
What's next, Leyland?
Louise writes, Dr. Hoffman, I was in a store and I saw two types of blood pressure machines. One measured pressure from the wrist and the other from the arm. My question is, which one is more accurate or are they both the same?
Well, I think the technology is coming along, but I still favor the arm ones. I think the wrist ones are a little less reliable, although they're coming along. And I recently heard about a new wrist, what's called ambulatory blood pressure monitor, which is going to give like continuous tracings. And they're trying to test it out because it's tricky technology to get this to work and to make it unobtrusive. I mean, they're even thinking of incorporating it in an upcoming version of the Apple Watch, but it's going to be tricky to do that. I still think, you know, call me old fashioned, but I think that the best way to do that is with the arm. And then there's some other things, you know, to think about is that you want to, you know, relax for a minute. You want to, you know, have your arm level on a table and not hanging down. You know, you want to be seated.
And you don't want to be holding up. You don't want to be holding up the weight of your arm either.
Exactly.
Because that can increase blood pressure. You want both feet flat on the floor, breathing normally. Yeah. Not talking.
Mm-hmm.
Empty bladder.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's a thing that we see often is in the physician's office. The person will be sitting on the physical exam table. Their feet are dangling off and their blood pressure is being taken by the medical assistant who's busy asking them questions.
Right. And the other thing is—
And that's the wrong way to take blood pressure.
And
yeah.
When people come to our office in New York, they all have high blood pressure because they've just gone through the Lincoln Tunnel or crossed the George Washington Bridge. They've negotiated horrible traffic. They've been hit with a parking charge of, $80.
Yes.
Or they've, walked through, an obstacle course on the sidewalk we kind of try to, we say when they have a high blood pressure before they see me, we say, well, okay, we'll give you a chance. Like, I'll talk to you. We'll have a nice conversation.
We'll take it again after the visit.
We'll take it again. Invariably it's lower. So there's that.
Yeah.
There's that. And that's a reason for really, we would like to have a system that's very reliable for ambulatory blood pressure that gives you a tracing of what your blood pressure is throughout the day, even at bedtime. Blood pressure can spike in people who have sleep apnea, for example. We want to know, and that would be ideal. Unfortunately, until recently, the devices used for ambulatory blood pressure were, it's kind of like a, continuous glucose monitor, but for blood pressure.
Yeah.
Glucose monitors now are unobtrusive. Just slap them on your arm and, they kind of embed under your, the first layer of your skin and they just you don't feel it. But when you get your blood pressure checked frequently, it inflates and deflates and it's obtrusive. And some people, they have kind of a little bit of an anxiety thing when the thing goes off, So
people need to be educated about blood pressure first of all. I think one of the best descriptions I've ever heard of, it's like the gas pedal on your car. When you're out and you're walking and you're active, your blood pressure will be higher.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be.
Yep.
It's the accelerator on your car.
Mm-hmm.
So people have to, I think it's going to cause more freak out than anything. Yep.
And by the way, when a stress test is being performed, one of the most dire signs on a stress test is when the blood pressure doesn't go up appropriately, and in fact, it paradoxically goes down. And what that suggests is that the heart is not doing a good job, and it's kind of like, you know, when you put your engine in the red zone and your engine stalls, that would be the mechanical analogy. So blood pressure should go up with exertion. You know, then there's, you know, variations on the theme. It's like you put people on a tilt table and you check them for POTS or postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and blood pressure and heart rate will go up when they're standing, just from standing. And, you know, they'll sometimes plummet when you're, the table is pivoted upright, and that's why people feel weak and dizzy with position change. And that is a debilitating condition. It's sometimes post-COVID, sometimes post-vaccine, or people who have chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia type conditions, they have that, you know, a paradoxical blood pressure response, you know, very dramatic with position change.
Very dramatic.
There's a lot about blood pressure, you know, that you know, I think we covered some of the basics. Okay. Good stuff. Okay.
Louise, there you go. Thank you for your question. Let's see. This is from Marianne. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Thank you for all the great information. I'm wondering what you think of weighted vests for building or preserving bone health. I think they will help me with NEAT calories, N-E-A-T. That means non-exercise thermogenesis, meaning you're cleaning your house, you're not exercising, you're dancing in your house. Mm-hmm. We're not really calling that exercise, but with calories. What do you think of the weighted vests for bone health? Some websites mention they can cause joint or back problems, but I was considering wearing one around the house, not necessarily for exercising.
I think that they can be good. You know, this, you know, non-exertional exercise, whatever, that whole notion of, you know, the thermogenesis that you have at rest, I guess if you're sitting on your couch with a weight vest watching TV, it's, you know, it's supported and it's not a thing, but just walking around doing your routine things with a weight vest could actually help with calorie burn. And it is downward pressure on your spine and your hips, and therefore can send a message to there's osteoblasts and the
clasts.
The clasts are actually ones to break it down. Osteoblasts build up, you know, so it, any type of stress actually helps your bone. So gravitational stress.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just send an astronaut up to space for 60 days, they'll develop, you know, a significant bone loss because of the loss of gravity. Yes. Gravity alone will do that.
So. Yeah.
So you're enhancing gravity. Problem with these weight vests, a couple of things. I do know people who've gotten really excited about the weight vest and they've, you know, walked around, they've done their normal walking, you know, they do their 10,000 steps with the weight vest and they develop problems in their hips or their knees or their feet because it, you know, you got to you kind of have to ramp up slowly. You can overdo it.
The other thing is it depends on your, you know, where are you metabolically? Are you kind of overweight and you're putting on this weight vest? You know, that's a lot of stress on your joints. So you have to think about this.
Right.
A weight vest may not be... I mean, this also explains why obese people rarely have osteoporosis.
Yes, exactly.
Unless their diets are really crappy because they're carrying around their weight all day long.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the few advantages of overweight is there's less likelihood of osteoporosis. It's not impossible. You can't tell without doing a test. Another problem with the weight vests is that some people prefer what is called rucking with, and this has actually become a whole movement, if you'll excuse the pun, because it's a program where people use a rucksack, and sometimes they're specially designed to accommodate progressively higher weights. And you can go way high. You can go like 30, 40, 50 pounds of weight that you carry. And you got to be a pretty fit individual to do that. And it's based on the kind of training that they do in the Army, where young, mostly men, do these really long forced marches with a full pack, you know, carrying, you know, scores of pounds.
A lot of weight.
Ammunition and weapons and provisions. And it really toughens you up. And it's great cardio. But it's also something that can cause injury. But here with rucking, the weight is more like coming, pulling your shoulders back, which actually favors a better posture than if you do the weight vest. The weight vest, you know, you can still have a kind of a crappy posture. If you ruck, it actually will pull your shoulders back somewhat, and you it might actually be a better way to carry weight.
Okay. Important stuff right there. There you have it, Marriott. And certainly for anybody with back problems or arthritis, they really should check in with their doctor before.
And it eases into it because it's easy to get overzealous. And then, you know, then you have a setback and you can't exercise, you know, for, you know, you're sidelined for a couple of months. No good.
Okay. All right. Marianne, thank you for that question. This next question comes from Mary in Ontario. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, thank you for all the wonderful information you share. I tore my supraspinatus full thickness, this is a rotator cuff tear repair, on December 17, and I have an appointment with the orthopedic surgeon April 3rd, which now has already passed.
Excuse me. What's the timeline on this? What's the timeline?
She tore it December 17.
Yeah.
And surgery on April 3rd.
Okay, so listen, that's Canada, right?
Yes.
You know, I'm just saying.
Here's nationalized health care.
I'm just saying. Now, it is possible.
The National Health Service.
Now, I don't know the details, but, you know, sometimes people have a tear and they go, you know, this is going to get better. This is going to get better. And, you know, that's actually a little bit what I did with my knee before I had some arthroscopic surgery on my knee, which was a tremendous success. I kind of suffered through an entire summer and I thought it was going to get better. And then finally I said, I get getting sick and tired of this. You know, self-diagnosis. And I went and I saw a knee specialist, said, I can fix this for you real easy. So he went in, you know, snipped out the piece that was kind of torn and I'm doing great. I mean, I just took a 3-mile run this morning.
Fantastic.
Grantastic. But anyway, there is a possibility that I'm not necessarily impugning the healthcare system up there because it's possible that this person was just waiting it out and seeing if it's going to get better. Cause that's a reasonable strategy for, you know, aches and pains is just, you know, might get better. Mm. But, you know, if it doesn't get better, then you need to go see a specialist, get an MRI, get a scan.
This is interesting. This happened December 17, but she finally has an appointment with an orthopedic surgeon on April 3rd.
I see.
She also has, she says, I also have subdeltoid bursitis with hyperemia.
Well, okay.
And I expect to have surgery to repair it. Mm-hmm. How can I heal quicker? Mary's question overall is, how do I heal from these surgeries?
Okay.
There's a protocol.
Mm-hmm. And when I broke my leg, I published a protocol, which was very popular. And it's, you know, surgical recovery. You can find it at drhoffman.com. But, you know, let's go through some of the elements of that. I think that for joint surgery for repair. I mean, certainly, you know, general principles, you want to have adequate protein because protein is involved in repair. You want to have adequate vitamin C because that's involved in, you know, repair, wound healing. You want to have some degree of anti-inflammatory, but not a drug anti-inflammatory. You're not supposed to take non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs after major joint surgery because they actually impair the inflammation, which actually helps with healing. But you can take natural things to kind of take the edge off pain and immobility. You know, curcumin is not bad. Boswellia, you know, Ache Action is a nice product that has boswellin. You
want to replete magnesium.
Sure.
And post-surgery, protein needs are higher. Mm-hmm. Protein needs are definitely higher for repair. So make sure you're getting adequate protein, animal protein preferably, to help in that repair process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, what are some of the, I mean, you could also, for pain, you could take something like the Relief product by CB Sciences, which helps pain. It's got some CBD, but it also has some PEA. That might be a good thing to take, you know, in the healing phase, because you're going to do physical therapy eventually. And sometimes the physical therapy is a little, you know, leaves you a little sore. You got to do the physical therapy. I do really believe in pre-op. Prehab, I call it, because you don't want to be in terrible nutritional status. If you're a smoker, you definitely want to stop. You know, I'm pretty sure
most
of our people are not. but that really jeopardizes the outcome of surgery. But if you have an adequate protein, you know, you won't be in such good shape at the time of surgery.
Exactly, as well as afterwards. So you want to exactly pre-op a lot, clean up your diet, make sure you're getting adequate protein, good rest, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of things to get ready for. But yeah, I'm just looking at that timeline. Like you said, December 17th.
Yeah.
Had an appointment on April 3rd today. Yeah. So
I mean, the advantage of the
Mary, write to us
system,
and let us know how you're doing.
I mean, the advantage of the healthcare system, you know, let's just, you know, in fairness, it's more equitable. I think people have, you know, they don't have
much medical
bankruptcy in Canada. I think more people get access to medical care or not denied access. But the compromise is that it takes a while. And you, mm-hmm. you know, you get, in effect, it's rationed. You know, it's hard to see a specialist in the United States. I mean, when I wanted my knee thing, I mean, I'd give you an example. I mean, I called up and I said, I need an appointment with the doctor who is a, you know, very well-known sports medicine guy at Hospital for Special Surgery, very popular. He does like Olympic teams. And so the first question was, how old are you? And at the time I had turned 66, I said, oh, well, you know, we don't really take Medicare. And I said, well, you know, I'm willing to pay. And they said, mm-hmm. oh, we have an appointment this week.
<You know>? There you go.
So, you know.
Pay to pray.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, fortunately, I have the means to, I'm self-insured in effect on, you know, for these kind of things. And I mean, I could have gotten surgery under Medicare from maybe a less illustrious physician. And so this is essentially, you know, there's a privilege associated with this. I mean, also Canadians sometimes jump across the border. And I think there's still some room for private physicians in Canada, just as there is in England. You know, they're the Harley Street physicians, and you have to, they're outside the system. You have to pay for them, you know? So, anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So, Mary, we hope you feel better soon. Let us know how you're doing post-op.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, shoulders can be challenging because these muscles are very tiny. And my suggestion for people who want to avoid shoulder problems as they get older is work on your shoulders and do, you know, shoulder exercises. I rarely, when I'm in the gym, miss these very boring exercises where I go in all four dimensions of my shoulders to try and strengthen these small muscles around my rotator cuff to stabilize them. Because I, you know, it's so common to develop shoulder problems because these tiny muscles, they atrophy and, you know, with stress, they tear. And then you got to have a repair.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We've got a question here from Teresa. She writes, I'm not one of your patients, but I feel like I've known Dr. Hoffman for many years because I've listened to his radio show since he started on WOR Radio.
Yeah. I mean, that is interesting because, you know, there's such a legacy of people listening in the New York area, first to Carlton Fredericks, and then Dr. Atkins, and then me.
Yes.
That over many years, you know, I think there's people feel like they've gotten to know me.
Yeah. So Teresa writes, I'd just like to know your opinion on Prolia shots for osteoporosis. She says, I've gotten two so far in 2023.
Yeah. So Prolia, I think, holds some advantages over the bisphosphonates. And the bisphosphonates basically shut down fairly long-term your osteoblasts, the things that break down bone. So hence you accumulate bone, but you may accumulate bone in an aberrant way. Prolia shots carry some of the disadvantages of the, you know, bisphosphonates, Actonel, Beneva, and, you know, the first one.
Fosmax?
Fosamax, right.
Fosamax.
And the they're injectable. They can also cause what's called dysfunctional bone, which is bone that appears stronger but is actually more brittle. But they have also a slightly higher risk for this awful condition of osteonecrosis of the jaw, which is like a very dire side effect, or really, fortunately, a relatively uncommon side effect of osteoporosis drugs. So, you know, I have patients where I say, hey, you know, you have to do it. You know, it's like, I can no longer fix you with supplements. You've crossed the Rubicon, so to speak, of irretrievable bone loss, and supplements alone will fix it. So Prolia is not a bad go-to. I don't have a big problem with it. But I also think it's often employed to, you know, as with many potent drugs, it's overprescribed.
Yeah. Yes. So, and I think one of the side effects of these injectables is bone pain.
Yeah, yeah. People take it, they feel achy. You know, and that's kind of like, I don't know if you had this, but there were times where I was growing so fast when I was young that I would have achiness in my bones. And that's a pretty common problem in adolescence. And you can kind of have that as your bones get stronger when you take these medications. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like growing pains.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to grow. You're past, you're not going to get taller.
you're not going to take Prolia shots and get taller.
That would be cool, but
that would be cool, right? Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Teresa, thank you for that question.
Okay. And but, by the way, I urge people to take Prolia. They can take all the adjunctive things. They can take, you know, hops-derived things like Ostera. They can take the calcium and magnesium and vitamin K and vitamin D because you need an all-of-the-above approach. The only question, I don't think it's been answered, is is it a good idea to take strontium with Prolia? I don't know that there's been studies on that. You know, probably wouldn't hurt, but I prefer to use strontium alone without medication to see what the strontium is doing on its own. And then, you know, if you get sensational results with strontium, press Prolia. You know, how do you know which one is doing the heavy lifting? You know, maybe you don't care. You just want to get fast resolution of your osteoporosis.
Okay. All right.
So
very good.
So we pause this, or actually let's conclude this this episode of Q&A with Layla. We still have a few more questions, and we urge people to send their questions to questions@drhoffman.net. And, do we have any announcements for this week? I mean, we can mention that, you can also call 877-726-8255 and record a question for the Intelligent Medicine Radio Show. Call anytime, 24/7. You can call during the show, but, there's also an answer machine where you can record a question. We use some of those recorded questions there. Check out our podcast because I've done some really good ones lately. I mean, they're all good, but a standout has been.
They are.
One is the Kate Atkison interview where she has written a book with a great title, Follow the Science, which is kind of ironic. Because, you know, they always say, follow the science. Well, it turns out the pharmaceutical industry and the health authorities have not really been following the science as they propagandize.
No.
And she's done a really deep dive on how they control the narrative. So that's a really great discussion we had with her. Then I had a nice discussion that we'll post this week or soon with a guy who's written a great book on the subject of the dialysis industry, which he feels is kind of a microcosm for American medicine, you know, profit-driven.
Really?
How patients, you know, this is something that's a terrific breakthrough is that we're able to save the lives of people in end-stage renal disease. But, you know, a lot of the private equity companies have been gobbling up private practices, and they basically, you know, it's kind of like these drive-through dialysis centers where people are really getting poor quality medical care, and, you know, they're bilking, you know, Medicare and Medicaid for reimbursement, And
wow,
it's just really kind of illustrates how for-profit medicine, you know, we criticize the system in Canada, but for-profit medicine isn't
either.
You know, there's some
true
real downsides to rampant, rapacious capitalism taking advantage of sick people and basically putting them on kind of an assembly line. So anyway, that was an interesting podcast that we that we'll drop this week. Yeah, so good stuff there.
Terrific.
We've got lots of information on the website. We're going to redo the website this year, so stay tuned. I am endeavoring with the new technology that we have. We may, I'm not promising, but we're exploring the possibility we can create written transcripts because some people prefer to read interviews.
Oh, wow.
And maybe we can do that. We'll see.
And, okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
So there we have it. All right.
Fantastic. Thank you, everybody. And remember, questions@dearhoffman.net is the place to email us with your questions and topics.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Robert Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Have a great week. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover intelligent medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news, and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com.